Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming out on this rainy, rainy morning. But your prize was that you got cupcakes. Well worth the drive in. I'm going to introduce the introducer, who is Bob Dewey, who is a long-time TMR member. He's also a graduate of SUNY Potsdam and holds master's and doctorate degrees in education from Syracuse University. Following time as a classroom teacher and guidance counselor, Bob served as an elementary school principal, and I didn't know that, Bob, in the Jamesville DeWitt School District. After retiring from the district, Bob joined the Syracuse University staff, first as a director of development, and then for 3 years as executive director of operations for SU's Lubin House in New York City. Bob has served on a number of local boards, including Onondaga Pastoral Council Center, Rescue Mission, and the YMCA. He is the president, he was the president of the Gifford Foundation for 10 years and is currently on the board of directors of Literacy CNY. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, and what a pleasure to be here to be a part of this program this morning. Ruth J. Colvin is a literacy pioneer, as many people in this room are aware. A native of Chicago, Ruth and her husband Bob moved to Syracuse in 1940. Ruth received her Bachelor of Science degree in business from Syracuse University in 1959. As an adult, yes. And you are an adult now, aren't you? In 1961, after reading in the local newspapers that 11,000 people in the Syracuse community were functionally illiterate, Ruth decided to tackle the problem. She began at that time working with professional reading specialists here, particularly at the university, to develop tutor training and develop materials for instruction. In 1962, Ruth founded Literacy Volunteers. Now known as Literacy CNY, this local not-for-profit organization provides instruction to adults in the central New York community who read, write, or speak English below the sixth grade level. Ruth often refers to two literacy offspring that she has been responsible for. Literacy CNY is her first. Her second initiative, Literacy Volunteers of America, which is now known as ProLiteracy, is based here in Syracuse as well, and that was organized in 1972. And Ruth and her husband, Bob, traveled throughout the world to provide direct literacy training in more than 60 countries, many of these at the invitation of a variety of governments, ministries, and universities. Ruth's accomplishments are legendary. In 1987, she was presented the highest award for volunteerism in the United States, the President's Volunteer Action Award. In 1993, Ruth was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. In 2006, Ruth received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. She has also received more than 20 other local and national awards, and has published several works. Ruth is the recipient of 9 honorary degrees and was recently honored in Albany by Senator DeFrancisco as a 2016 New York State Woman of Distinction. Joining Ruth, a couple of other things about Ruth you may not be aware of. Ruth plays golf 3 times a week. On the alternate days, she attends her gym. She's a life member of the board of Literacy CNY, and she continues to be an active volunteer in our program. She participates regularly both in a book club and in a Bible and book club she established over 50 years ago. And this month, our community will join Ruth in celebrating her 100th birthday in a big birthday bash at the Old Hotel Syracuse. Ruth is joined today by Karen Tift, who is president of the Board of Directors of Literacy CNY. Her current interest in education began through her work as a member of the Board of Education of the West Tennessee School District and with the local BOCES board. She is an active member of several school board associations. Karen has served at the Central New York Community Foundation in the past as Director of Education Initiatives. She has also been a trustee for Father Champlin's Guardian Angels Society, volunteers with fundraising for Northside Ministries, and belongs to the Camillus Optimist Club. It is my pleasure to present my good friends, Ruth and Karen.
Can you read this? Yes. Frustrating, isn't it? You don't know if I'm inviting you to a party or warning you of danger. Many of you have seen this before, but I bet you can't read this one. It's frustrating, but I want to put you in the shoes of a non-literate. We forget how important it is to be able to read. But I'm going to give you the joy of reading this. What is the letter that follows the R? Follows R in the alphabet. S. Ah, in the alphabet. What follows an L? H. K. D. Now read it. What is it? Louder. Smile. I hope you're all smiling now. That's something we have in common. We may not have the same language, we may not have the education, we may not have the same background, but we all smile the same. Yes, I started Literacy Volunteers in 1961 when I read of the 1960 census of 11,000. My question was, they weren't in Africa or Asia. I had read about illiteracy there, but not in our educational city. Who were they? Why couldn't they read? What was being done here? Nothing. Well, because nothing had been done, I decided I got to do something, get somebody interested. So I invited to a coffee members of the board. It took a lot of courage to do that, you know, to members of the Board of Education, the presidents of the various organizations, Rotary, Kiwanis, the Women's Club, Church Women United, and they all came. They were all shocked, as I was. But nobody offered to do anything except one woman, Myra Eady. Big woman that I had never met before. I thought that was a denomination, and she was from one of the churches. No, she was representing 80 churches, the women of 80 churches in the area. And she invited me to present my program to them, which I did. They voted unanimously to accept the literacy project if I would take charge. So Literacy Volunteers was on its way. We soon found that 11,055 was just the tip of the iceberg. We now know there are only 60,000 functional illiterates in the Syracuse area and over 30 million in the United States. Literacy Volunteers grew, and soon others from Rochester, Buffalo, Albany, all around, they were finding they had a similar problem, and so they were coming for help. And that's when Literacy Volunteers of America was formed, trying to share what we were learning. And this merged until we merged to become pro-literacy. Recruiting students and tutors, getting funding staff, a board of directors were more important. And we had to try to do locally what other people might think was a national problem. But to me, that was the basis of our work, and training is the basis of all our work. Even though all of us need board of directors, we need funding, we need all of the other things. When you're doing, you find your mission. And our mission was teaching people to read and write. And how do you do that? By training volunteers. So I only had a phonics method at first, and I thought this was perfect. But you know, it's lifelong learning, and I kept learning. And I soon learned that we were losing students and tutors. So I did what I should have done at the beginning. We all have 20/20 hindsight. I should have gone to the university, which I did. I went to Dr. Frank Green, who was head of the reading clinic at the time, and told him my problem. I'm losing students and tutors. And he said, I know why. And I said, why? Your methods are 30 years behind the times. I said, why didn't you tell me? I couldn't call and tell you you were doing wrong. You had to ask me. I said, I'm asking. He invited me to come to the university and meet that Saturday with 20 PhD reading specialists. I was delighted. I went there with my notebook. I can take shorthand as fast as you can talk, so it was wonderful. But I was amazed. There were so many new things that were known at the PhD level that we at the bottom level didn't know. So I felt my job was to take it out of the garbage digu of the PhD, and I'm all for PhDs, my kids have them, but to put it in layman's language, and that's what I did. But with the help of the people from Syracuse University, no one can ever do these things alone. We've come a long way since then. We are now doing a national training based on my books, which will be on the internet. But that's 8 editions later, so you can see it was lots of research later and lots of help from people. Yes, we're helping change people's lives, but we're also changing the not only the students' lives, the tutors' lives. I was thinking our main project is to help the students learn to read, to learn to speak English. But my husband, after we've been at it for about 10, 15 years, he said, you know, you're doing just as much in changing the tutors' lives. And I said, how? Most of them have never met with someone from the inner city. They have never met with someone from another country. So you're breaking down economic, racial, religious barriers for them as well as for the students. And to me, that's important. It's lifelong learning, and I'm still learning. I'm still teaching. I'm teaching a Chinese student now. I've been to China 3 times. I thought I knew all about China. I'm learning a lot more. I've written all of this in the book Away with Words. In fact, coming up with Bob Dewey coming here to the zoo brought back memories to me. I can't remember her name, but she was one of the board members of the zoo that was on our committee, on our board. And she's the one that came up with the name, Away with Words. So you and the zoo have a lot more to give me than you thought. I'm going to leave this here with anybody that would like to read How We Started, How We Grew. And you may want to look at the picture on the back. Was I ever that young? It's a picture of me by my open refrigerator. And as you know, that's what we used for our books. So it's still filled with books. My husband retired early, and we visited 62 countries. And we worked as volunteers in 26 developing countries. We would give 3 months every year to a developing country. There again, trying to share our skills, mine in literacy, basic literacy, and English second language, and writing books in their languages. And people say, well, how many languages do you speak? Sorry, one. Because I had so many always through a translator. But you can, if you have communication with people, you can work together. And Bob worked in small business. And if you're interested in that at all, people are the important part to me. And in our many countries that we visited, this is a story of, in 9 countries, 94 stories of people who have touched our lives. As I say, whether you're teaching or whether you're working within another country, it's people that are important. As well as all we're doing, trying to train others and help other communities do the same thing that we're doing here. The most important thing is teaching. And as you say, that's what I'm still doing. My student is from Hong Kong, and she is a housekeeper at one of the local hospitals. It's opening my eyes a lot more all the time, and this is what I think is so important. Now, Karen is president of our board at Literacy Central New York, and she's going to tell you more what we're doing actually at Syracuse Central New York.
Well, as you can see, many years ago, this woman took on a very daunting task to address the needs of his community as far as literacy goes. And what was 11,000 and has now become 60,000 is still the responsibility of Literacy CMY, which you may formerly have known as Literacy Volunteers of Greater Syracuse. Ruth, as she has explained to you, built a very strong foundation, not only with her own ingenuity, but by getting Syracuse University involved and many of the corporations in the area, the churches, the banks, the community. And that's what it takes to address the question of literacy in adults. I think that you will find that it is hard to believe there are so many adults in Syracuse who do not have literacy skills above a sixth grade level. And I think that right now in this community, the conversations that are going on around poverty are very significant to what we are doing. At least that's what we see. And so that's why we're very grateful to be invited here today to tell you about how we have gone and from one student, one volunteer that Ruth initiated, and a process that we still use, to some more innovative delivery methods for educational services to our students. When I first came on the board about 5 years ago, we were servicing approximately 100 students. 100 compared to 60,000. We were housed in one of the libraries, which was a good place to deliver that one-to-one service, but it really did not have any of the classroom effect that we had. At that time, we were invited to move into the SEOC, and thanks to Tim Penix, which is an educational setting. And not only are we able to take students who are literally walked across the hall to where we are, who need those very basic learning skills, but our students get to see what opportunities there are in job training and in many other different options that they might not have known about beforehand. Our executive director, Marcia Tate, could not be here today. And I would like to just take a minute and explain to you that since she came to Literacy CMY, she has brought to us some new methods of delivery of systems. And she, and all of those of you who are associated with foundations will know this, she has exhausted every funding source available in the city of Syracuse. And we are very grateful for that because it has not only allowed us to build a stronger organization, but it has allowed us to deliver a better package to our students. We rely very heavily on New York State funding and have had an increase in that funding over the last year, which up until 2 years ago, at the end of June, we had serviced 600 students. That's a big leap for us. And this is how we do it. Where Ruth has started the one-to-one process, that's what we use, where it's still applicable. But we have found that by hiring certified teachers and holding classes of 12 to 15 students, we can make them even, there's something about group learning that is just sticks better, and it works much better for us. We also found through surveying our students that while many of our students, we have two groups, those who for whatever reason may have dropped out of school or even stayed in school and not acquired the necessary literacy skills, and then we have the group of ESL students, English as a second language, which is due to the fact that we have such a large refugee population coming into Syracuse, New York. So the students would come, and they would go to class for several hours a week, and then they'd go home. And for many of them, there was nowhere at home to reinforce what they had learned in the classroom. So then Marcia took some of our volunteers. Our volunteers are very highly trained, and they now run the conversation groups that really allow a group of these people to come together and talk about what they've learned, to use the literacy skills that they have learned, and then to go on into looking at maybe a new job, maybe a new experience in life. We had one woman who I spoke with, this was about 4 years ago, And she had come to this country with a significant other from, I believe it was Croatia, and she had some, she was very well educated, but she did not have a lot of English skills. And so she went through our program, and then she went through, at the SAOC, a training program to become a medical billing clerk. Well, she was able to acquire all these skills. But then she had to go out and interview for a job. And it was very difficult to translate from her own language, language-wise, what she could do. Not only because she spoke a different language, because she was not comfortable with the English. So that was really the beginning of the conversational groups. And they have proved most beneficial. We also have built partnerships. A lot of this is through some of the grants that we have done, but we are a member of the Literacy Coalition. We also have a new grant that Marcia went out and found this one too, with the Office of Temporary and Disabilities Agency. And what we do is we partner with agencies like Jobs Plus, Salvation Army, and several other community organizations so that we can look at their clients and see how they fit in our program and track them to see what type of results they have. One thing we are is about testing and outcomes and accountability, which I think is one of the reasons that we become so successful. Anyone who comes to our program has pre-testing to assess what their skills are. And if they do not fit in one of our programs, we try to send them out to one of the other adult literacy organizations in the community where they might have a better fit. For example, up on the north side is a program where adults can go in the evening. That fits for some people. That's what we're about. We're not just trying to help people learn to read. We're trying to fit into their everyday life so that we can give them those opportunities that they need to succeed. As Ruth said, we are there to help them be productive citizens of the community. Our other partnerships, we're always looking for new endeavors. And one of our latest endeavors, and I'm very, having an education background, this makes me very happy. Recently, through the Northeast Community Center and through the school system, Syracuse school system, we were able to start a class at Edwin Weeks School, elementary school. And that class, Marcia put up the sign-up list. Our classes are about 12 to 15 people. We had over 20 people sign up in one day for this class, 20 adults. And the reason it is so popular is because the adults for this English language class have 6 hours of instruction a week and 2 hours of conversational instruction in the school that their child attends. This is really making the services more available to people who, you know, they have to balance things. And so we're hoping at the end of the year not only to be able to test our students as to how successful they have been, but to relate that to how it may have impacted their children. And to me, that's very exciting, and it's something that we are going to pursue in the future. I had told Eileen when I came, I cannot give you all the statistics of what we do, but I can give you the stories of what we do, and I can tell you about our board. And I'm very proud to be a member of this board. I was talking to Connie a little earlier, and I have two board members here today. Bob Dewey, who introduced us, who is a long-standing member of the Syracuse community, has become a very close friend through all of this experience. And our newest board member is Karen Bull, who is in the back, who is associated with University College. We have just quite a variety of professionals represented on our board, and it's a very engaged board. We actually do a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of commitment. We are now learning the art of fundraising thanks in part to a grant from the Community Foundation and through some very hard work on the part of our own board members. And so if you are interested in learning more about Literacy CNY, you don't have to really become a board member immediately. We have also come up with an idea that we like to integrate community members onto our committees. And that could be a committee planning our annual event, Scrabble Mania. It could be a committee that looks at how to do fund development. Or it could be a new committee that we're very excited about, which has had some real success, is our advocacy committee, which is headed up by Amy Kremenick from OCC. And we have several community members on that, and we like to do outreach to our elected officials just so they know that we're there and what we're about. And it really gives you a really good view. And we've had several people come through committees onto the board. It's been very exciting to do all of that. Why, as an adult, if you have gone many years, maybe you've been married, maybe you have a family, maybe you have a job, why do you look to improve your literacy skills? Well, I can't really give you definitive reasons, but I can tell you one thing. Our mission statement, as Ruth stated it, has not changed. How we deliver has changed, but we are still there to help people improve their literacy skills so that they can get that better job, so that they can get a better quality of life. So when they go to the pharmacy to pick up the medication for their children, they can read the label and they can ask questions that will help them down the line. And more importantly, so that they can help their children, because that is how we change the culture of the community that we live in. It's very important. In June, every June we have an event, and you're all invited to honor our top students and our top volunteers. And this June, we had a woman who was graduating from our program. She was from the Dominican Republic, and her son was coming to the United States to live with her. And she wanted to be better prepared to live within the culture that she lived in. And so she wanted to improve her literacy skills. And the day that she won that award, her son had just arrived 2 days earlier. So he was most proud of his mother, most proud of his mother. And we have stories like that all over. Ruth always has a story for us at a board meeting. One of her first clients, I'll never forget this one. One of your first clients, one of your first students, was a man who wanted to read the Bible so that he could read it to his family. I mean, sometimes it's as simple as that. Sometimes it's augmenting other skills. It really is really something. I want to, before I leave today, I'm going to do a commercial. One of our big fundraising event occurs in January this year. It's called Scrabble Mania. And if you haven't heard of it, you should go to our website, and you can write this down. It's www.literacycny.org. It's a website that you should visit anyway, because there is a ton of information about what we do and how we do it. It's very important to us. And then again, as Bob mentioned, all of these beautiful cupcakes today are significant because Ruth is celebrating all year, everywhere you go, her 100th birthday, 100 years, and we're very proud of that. And a group of Ruth's friends have planned through Literacy CNY her birthday party for her, which will be November 18th, as Bob said. And we are hoping that you all think of coming, because it's been planned as a very personal event to honor her life and what she has done, and we're very excited about it. Now, I tried to think of a way to implant in your mind what we've talked about today. And as I look around the room, I see quite a few cell phones on the table, And I know what those are for. That's so you can check your calendar. And I can see that some of you have given up a calendar, which is fine, which is what you've earned. But I want to tell you about a story that has stayed with me since the very first weeks that I joined the board at Literacy CMY. And it does relate to calendars. Because if you were to turn on your calendar now to check what you were doing today or tomorrow or whatever, there's a lot on there, I'm sure. I know on my calendar, I have all my grandchildren's activities, which is really a lot. But the thing of it is, I went into the office one day, and one of our students was there. Her name was Sandra. She's the mother of three children, a single mother. And she had come to Literacy CMY because she wanted to learn to read. She had a job, an unskilled position, and she wanted a better job. And she also wanted to make a difference in the lives of her children. So she's sitting at the computer, and I'm thinking, oh, she must be doing really well. So I went up to the computer screen, and there on the screen is a page from a calendar. Now, I'm thinking she's putting in information about what she's going to be doing. As I step up closer, she is focused on the calendar page, a monthly calendar, which is blank. And what she's doing is she's trying to read the days of the week. Now, when you go home today and you pick up your calendar, just read the days of the week and think about the struggle that Sandra had. She was fortunate. She went on to SEOC. She was able to upgrade her job and think of what she's able to do for her children. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Hi. After Bob's introduction of Ruth, I felt I needed to take a nap already. Okay. I have a question, though, about non-English speakers, and it seems like that's a second track. I mean, non-English speakers who are have literacy issues, too. What is the sequence? Do you tackle both problems simultaneously, or do you let ESL handle the English teaching, or is the conversation groups the way to do it, or it seems that complicates the mission.
It is a challenge, and as I said, the way that we handle it is we have a class, and they are mixed with English second language speakers and those who do lack literacy skills. Any student who comes into our program has a pre-assessment so that we know what their skills are and what their capabilities are. And we use certified teachers. Many of them have taught in another group we partner with are the city schools and BOCES, so that they understand the problems that they are going to encounter. We do not have separate classes. It is one class for whichever.
At first, it was just literacy. Those that could speak English but couldn't read and write. And when people came in and said, well, this is my brother Joe. He can't read and write, but he can't speak English either. What they would do, because we were all volunteers, we'd say, well, Mrs. Smith, she could work out that problem. Or we'd try to assign it. There was no other place to send English second language students. Right. Until finally we decided, no, this was such an important part of not only illiteracy, was the communication skills of listening and speaking, that there again, I went to the top professionals around the country to find out what were the best methods to do it. We are now, as I say, teaching both. Those that cannot speak, that cannot read and write, that speak English, and those that need help in speaking and understanding as well as reading and writing.
I think it's a challenge for most of the adult programs because more and more they're finding that, especially with the Sudanese population, many of these people have grown up in refugee camps and have not even had the opportunity to learn in their own language. You know, as a beginning, as a foundation. So it really is, it's a task.
Thank you for being here. I'm very honored to be here with Ruth. You mentioned about the impact that that this organization has had on volunteers. And I'll have to tell you that 22 years ago, I came to Syracuse, and one of the first things I did was I got involved, and I got training for ESL through the Literacy Fund, the Literacy Organization of America, and it really had a big impact on my life. The first person I tutored was a Chinese woman, and I'll never forget her. She taught me so much. She opened my eyes up to a lot of things. I continued with ESL, and I'm now an ESL teacher professionally. So I just want to tell you that it had a big impact on my life, and I really applaud the work that you do. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'm kind of along the same lines. About 15 years ago, I was a board member for Literacy Volunteers, and I'm a past president, so I know Ruth quite well. And it's been so wonderful to watch your organization change hands and grow. And I think the closest thing that I can come to the experience that your students have, because I've also been an adult literacy tutor, and it's a very humbling thing as an adult to teach an adult to read, because you watch the adult struggle, and it's very difficult. It's very different to teach a child to read than it is to teach an adult to read, because there's that embarrassment. But I actually had an experience firsthand where I was able to put myself in that position. My family and I went to Italy, and I don't speak any Italian at all. And we had decided this one night we were all going to go out and bring something to the dinner table. And I decided I was going to bring Italian meats and cheeses, and I went to an Italian deli, and I couldn't read the signs, and the people behind the counter made fun of me, and so did the people in line. Uh-huh. And I was absolutely humiliated. And I immediately thought, oh my gosh, this is the work that they do, and this is what it feels like to be on the other end of that. So, Ruth, I just applaud what you've done all these years and how the organization has grown. And you don't realize the number of people whose lives you've touched, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Hi, I wanted to second the praise for Literacy CNY and Ruth for your work. It's so important. I wanted to ask a question about capacity. You mentioned there was a waiting list for the program that you're running on the north side. But what is your capacity? Do you have waiting lists? How do the various literacy organizations work with that issue?
We do have a waiting list. It's a fluctuating. It fluctuates. I'm going to give you an average, about 70 to 85 people on our waiting list. Now, a waiting list can be a positive or a negative. It's a negative if you aren't doing anything to address the people on that list or what their needs are. But one of the things that, because we do get people in, we do assess them, we can refer them to other agencies or to the city school district or wherever it might be appropriate. And so while we have a number on the waiting list, that waiting list moves right along. But we always have an overflow of students. And I know there's a few people here related to not-for-profits. I think you understand what our one drawback is.
Hi. I just want to also applaud the work that you do. I was at a conference a few years ago and ran into a woman who spoke English. And we started talking, and she said that she had come here to learn English. And I said, really? She said, yeah, she was planning on staying 4 months in the U.S. And I said, oh, where are you staying? She says, I don't know yet. Like, you have no idea? So in talking more, I invited her to come back to Syracuse. And she stayed with me for 4 months, and she took ESL classes. And it was so convenient because every day I drove downtown to go to work, I would bring her to the ESL. She was actually going to the EOC Center, where she ran into other people from Cameroon. So she was originally from Cameroon, Africa. Mm-hmm. She was living in German-speaking Switzerland, and she needed to learn how to speak English so she could get a good job. And that was her motivation. So, funny story. So one day we're driving back and forth. She says, what is this place, dog grooming? So I immediately explained the difference between dog grooming and going to a vet, and why you would need to take your pet to the vet, and why you need to take your dog to get groomed. And she looked at me and she said, oh, in my country, if dog gets sick, dog die. And we both burst into laughter, and it was one of the funniest things she ever said. But it was also telling about the connection that we were making and the importance of the conversation, which I never really put my finger on till I heard you speaking today. But she was in school all day. It was that conversation we had in the car every day that really married what she was learning with life experience. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, because that's absolutely what we're finding, yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One of the examples you gave was really about wanting to be able to read the prescriptions and the handouts and all that. And so that really brings in the issue of health literacy, which is another whole different entity. Do you address that in any way?
It's not that we address it specifically. Our classes are set up, as I said, for students 16 years and older who have below sixth grade reading, writing, and speaking English skills. They are set up from zero to third grade and from third to sixth grade. After that, we move people into different programs, whatever's appropriate for the level they're at. Is the health issue addressed specifically? Not in any great amount. You know, it's really, it's a basic living skill that's covered, but it's not addressed in any large amount.
What we do is you can get your student to the right person in the right place. Those of you that have been tutors understand, it's like part of your family. And when you have a problem, you help them find where it is. Whether it's a job, then you focus your training on job preparedness. If it's on a health problem, I have very often had mothers whose children were sick and they couldn't read the directions. One, I remember, she'd gotten the prescription and it said a number one and a number three. And she couldn't remember, is it one tablet every 3 hours or three tablets, one every day? So things like that can make a big difference. So whether you're working one-on-one, I think all daily problems come to attention. And then what we do is refer it back to our organization to have them direct them to the right help.
That's why it's so important for us to maintain not only the classroom model and the push-in model at the elementary school, but the one-on-one tutoring, which is always done. It really addresses the specific needs of people.
Ruth, I'm so proud to be in the same room with you. But there are children that drop out of our school every year, and you're dealing with adults. Is there any way to pick them up almost immediately after they are out, after they have dropped out of school, so that their skills in reading, writing can be improved?
Well, our students come to us because they want to make a change in their life, because they want to learn. And that makes them truly committed to the program. We are not an educational organization. We deliver a community service, which is literacy. So I'm not sure how that would work specifically, but we do work very closely with the Syracuse City School District and with BOCES, who do run adult education programs. So we try to keep our finger on who is out there and who could qualify for our services.
This may pick up on that same point. Do we know, 60,000 people that don't have adequate literacy skills, do we know who they are? Do we have any data on how they're functioning?
The data that we have comes from a PIAAC report, and I do not know what that stands for. It is a New York State report that was done a couple of years ago, and it actually did cite that in Onondaga County, I believe the rate is 18%. In the city, it's 35%. So we know there are people out there. But you have to understand, we are successful with our students because they are looking for this. You know, they want to learn to read. They want to apply it to their life. That's why it's successful.
Years ago, the principal of H.W. Smith called me and said, you teach people to read. And I said, yes. And they said, we have those in school here who can't read. They're in eighth and ninth grade, and they read at a second grade reading level. Can you help us? And I said, no, we only work with adults 18 and over. And they said, don't you do any preventative work? So I said, no, right now we didn't, but I personally will. So I went over there, and we had no material to test them, what they were, so I just would have a book about a fifth grade reading level, and if they could read that book, it was beyond us, and it was below. They were all fifth grade or above, and I said, no, we have to be below that, and I want to be sure that their IQ was normal, that they were teachable. He finally said, we have one young man, Sam. He's the big problem here. He's a big boy. He's a trouble boy all the time, and we don't think he can read at all. And so they said, sent him in. Well, Sam came to me, and I gave him the book, and he reread the, and I reread the next word, is, and going through, finally, he threw the book down, and he said, so I can't read. And I said, well, at least I don't have to undo any bad habits, because I knew then I was going to work with him. And I said, but the only problem I have is I only work with adults. I don't work with children or young people, so I'd have to treat you like an adult. I couldn't have said anything better, because he wanted to be treated like an adult, like a child. Well, what I did, I worked with him on my own and took grades. I got him up to about a sixth or seventh grade reading level. He dropped out of high school. And by that time, as you say, when you're a tutor, you become good friends. He went into the service, he got his GED, he married, and he called me back years later and said, Mrs. Colvin, this is Sam Coleman. I said, Sam, where are you? He said, I'm here in Syracuse visiting my family. But he said, I forgot to tell you something. And I said, what did you forget? He said, I forgot to thank you. And so you never know when you're going to touch another life. And as a sign, I happen to be in both places. But I think there are... I was honored by Laura Bush, and she sat at the table with me, and I'm telling her, you are working with children, you're breaking the cycle of literacy, it is wonderful what you're doing, and she's shaking her head, and I said, this is such an important thing, to break the cycle with the children. But I said, who is the child's first teacher? The parents. And if you've lost the first 3 years, you've lost the very important part in their brain of bringing them up. So it isn't either or, the child or the adult. It is both. And we're working at the adult level, but I agree that level is very important.
What percentage breakdown is there between people who are literate coming into the program versus the ESL? And what is the feeder system for just people who can't read and write?
The breakdown is actually about 50-50. It varies from year to year within a 5% range, but it is pretty much 50-50. We take references from referrals, as I said, from the SEOC, because that is an opportunity, that's an educational opportunity center, and a lot of people go there looking for a program that will help them. If they don't possess certain skills, we can put them in our programs. We also get referrals from the other adult literacy organizations, because as I said, you try to match what type of service you can provide to the needs of the people that are looking for it. We don't really lack for applicants. So the feeder system may be word of mouth also. You know, many of our students belong to their church, their community's group, and, you know, they talk about their success and their progress, and that's how we hear about them. I know Ruth used to tell about corporations that would refer people to you, but that's not so much anymore. It's more community interaction.
Okay, if we're all finished with questions, I just want to make a comment myself. University College, as part of the Corporate Volunteer Council, participates each year in Dictionary Day, where each organization that's a member volunteers to adopt an elementary school, and in our own buildings or organizations, we raise money to purchase dictionaries for every third grader in the Syracuse City School District. It's a pleasure to go each and every year. We go to Seymour, we go to other schools in the area, H.W. Smith, I think we've been to, and hand out those dictionaries to those third graders. It's such a joy for them to receive their own dictionary, and I can't tell you how often one of those third graders will say to me, "Can I have another one for my mom or my dad so that they can learn English?" It's just a wonderful program. So anyone who wants more information on that, you can email me. So I want to thank Ruth and Karen for joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and we appreciate you sharing your information. And I'll put some more information on our website about how you can help. Thank you.
Thank you very much.